welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Shannon Sankey. Shannon Sankey is the Margaret Whitford Fellow at Chatham University's MFA program. Her work has appeared in Pittsburgh Poetry Review, Atticus Review, and The Rectangle, among others. She works as a copywriter and editor in Pittsburgh, PA. Hi, Shannon. Welcome to Prosody.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Great. Can you begin by reading us some poems?
Sure. I'll start off with Watching My Mother Sleep. A book of Bible verses falls from her hand, her mouth open like a sand-salted fish. I want to touch her yellow hair, the ring of roses around her arm, to wake her, see her rise in the window light like an old balloon for a third cigarette. See her rock over coffee and lift her shirt, stick herself in a pinch of fat from her white belly with a clean needle, wrist steady in a prayer. See the life in her that peels chicken from styrofoam, flicks a mascara wand like somebody's girlfriend, laughing, gap-toothed. This is a poem that came out of a prompt I found that was Let a Dream Interrupt Your Poem. And I thought that was pretty interesting. This is called Dream Book. My grandmother in her bathtub full of honey, nightgown, shakes a bag, singing baby of yellow leaves across her coverlet. Her mother's smell of bourbon, spineless dream book. It is morning. She searches the soft pile of pages for a phrase, tea with dead aunt, and bends over the bed trapped in washing machine with bare feet, balsam fir in the attic. She finds the one, her father, not her father, and lifts the little ticket to her face. Treasure Cove. On the private beach of a four-star resort, we booked off-season with two coupons. My father considers quitting his day job to search for gold doubloons full-time. We eat bright slices of mango beside turtle nests full of buried moons. Some cold trinket flashes once in the break, and he runs like a bird into the hot wash. But the tide lays down just another dull shell. No shipwreck, no fortune, no small wonder. I visit my mother. I come to her new house after dark, and we wait for the harvest moon on the porch steps. We offer our faces up like paper plates. In the suburbs, the ferns are fresh and fragrant, the wind white and wet. But when we lived together as girls, we carried groceries up from the street, up from yellow brick and trolley tracks. We climbed to small, dark house after small, dark house all those years. We were strong, lifting our gallons of milk alone. We spoke all the way, soft, with sweet spring water in our little throats, the moon watching like a mother we never knew.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Shannon Sankey. So Shannon, what I really like about your poems is sort of how slowed down and focused they are with their imagery. Can you talk a little bit about how you construct, how you work with sort of a moment and then work with that to construct a poem?
Sure. I'm really interested in working with compression right now. So taking single images and sort of condensing them into something sort of dreamy and small and digestible, but also something with teeth. Yeah.
So how do you sort of do that? Obviously you're attracted to like one image, but then how do you compress it? What do you mean?
It's paying attention to sound, really, and making sure every word is working toward one goal, one aesthetic, and really sparing nothing toward that. Yeah. So every word has to count.
Right. So is that sort of what you did with the dream poem when you interrupted? You had this really nice weaving of the surreal and the real. So how do you negotiate that in a poem?
It's difficult. That's a bit of an experiment for me, but letting a dream interrupt a poem is an interesting exercise, letting these strange images into the really mundane. Mm-hmm. sort of exposing a different wavelength of a character in the poem was really, really fun for me.
Right, and I like the way that you sort of interrupted it syntactically, like in a sentence. You didn't do it just like narrative, then dream, then narrative. Right. You wove it in, which was really interesting, I thought.
Yeah, it makes this sonic experience too, with these disturbing images. You have to be able to read it, and it has to flow both ways, I think.
Right. What I also liked is at the end of the shipwreck poem, I liked the ending a lot. No shipwreck, no fortune, no small wonder. So how do you come to your endings?
That's a bit of an ironic ending, I guess. I feel like a shell is a small wonder, but that's my father in that poem. I like to come to not the most obvious ending, but I do like the ending to pack a little bit of a punch, if that makes sense. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't like to sort of fade out.
Yeah. Hit them right at the end.
Right.
Can you read some more poems?
Sure. This poem, actually, I'm really excited about having it included in the Pittsburgh Poetry Houses project. I'm not sure if you've heard of that. But they're, you know, putting poems on postcards and putting them in little mailbox-type structures around town, which is a really cool community project. It's called Groceries in Carrick. My grandmother looks for the good, cheap donuts. Unbelievable, $9 for a book of stamps. She finds the sweet butter bread my father loves. She tells me it is bad luck to fix an inside-out shirt before noon, her tag shining like a soft black curl on her neck. So this is an ode I wrote to my father, who anonymously mows the letters USA into Sunny Slopes in South Park every year. So no one knows that he does it, so I wanted to sort of honor him with a poem. Ode to my father. The morning after my father mows USA in the open field beside Brownsville Road, wild blue turkeys come to cool their feet in the hips of S. A passing jogger slows down to a soft trot. Above, pilots smile into ham sandwiches. He will not be named in the headline. USA cut into South Park Slope by park maintenance. But in September, when the Boy Scouts come to lay flowers in each bald letter, he will watch from the road. This is a poem about Sewickley, which is sort of the experience of driving through a neighborhood you can't afford to live in. that's where this comes from. Thorn Street. Behind the sleeping trains on the riverbanks on the first warm night in April, we drive down another town's main street. Shopkeepers lock their doors, and through the dark glass, Ethiopian coffee cans, hanging scarves, sweet pink tomatoes, gold baubles cool off in blue-filtered sunspots like deep, wet treasures catching light on the soft tongue of the sea. We push past like one rogue wave down the road where long white porches stay warm like hanging oranges, where cotton curtains glow soft on clean bay windows, where a boy on a skateboard doesn't know yet that we won't turn into a driveway and waits. Little Prayer. You should see all of his bones when they are dancing, sweeter and lonelier than rum on his way to the bar. He is a hollow drum made of bones, sick with some astounding beat. When the wind comes off him, off his bone island body, out of his brutal holy mouth, you would let it scatter you. You can't help but be delivered. So this is a poem out of a project that I'm currently working on, exploring autoimmune disease and sort of trying to articulate that particular illness experience. So a lot of my current poems are coming out of that. Infusion. Finally, I am in the chair. I give my wrist for a band. Yes, to coffee. I put on wool socks. I take out a book of poems. It is 8 o'clock. A man in a suit sleeps a chair over. A nurse opens my vein and hangs a cold bag of the drug. She covers my bicep with a hot blanket. She built a table last weekend. She sets the drip slow. She disappears behind the station. I recline. A nervous man in cargo shorts rushes into the room. He reaches for a gun. I tear the needle out of my arm and I run. I make it out. But it is useless. I die somewhere else. I am fruit off the vine. I am daydreaming. I sit and suck and hang and ripen.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Shannon Sankey. So Shannon, there's so many things that stick out that I just want to talk to you about.
Sure.
I like how you choose details and imagery. I like the different images and details that are flowing through your work. And there's so much that sticks out day to day. Like, how do you choose what to include and what not to include?
I'm kind of known for my thumb poems, which are just all of the notes that I keep in my phone, which are usually single images or phrases that occur or that I observe from day to day. And that's sort of where I draw a lot from. You know, the things that stick out to me tend to be the stuff of poems. So I write it all down.
So what kind of things would you say stick out in a general, like in an average day?
Oh, man, anything from something weird that someone says to, you know, something I noticed on my professor's face or something I'm thinking at the bar or, you know, a sign that I drive past. Just being really open to all that input and being open-minded to it and thinking, you know, maybe there's a place for this in a poem and just putting it in a bank is really helpful to me.
So would you say that your process is sort of just collection and then later you sit down and draft?
Yeah, collection, but maybe a little more intuitive than that. I think, you know, I most people would agree you work on a poem mentally for a while. And I think there are components that come in that you didn't know would make it in, or things that you notice tend to be informed by what you're thinking about. So while it is organic, I think also it's a little bit cognitive too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Would you say then you have a stringent revision process?
Yeah, I would. Especially because my tendency is toward compression.
Mm-hmm.
It's always tempting to not say enough. So my revision process is not cutting away. It really is shaking things out and expanding things and pushing harder. You know, particularly in places where, you know, people have questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's interesting. When I revise too, I tend to end up doing a lot of additive stuff.
Right.
As opposed to like reducing things.
Right.
Cutting away. And I really love the sounds in your work, particularly that little prayer poem with all the bones dancing. And so then would you say there's an element of working with sound that happens when you're drafting or when you're revising or both?
I think a lot of the sonic qualities happen in the draft. I think because there's a momentum there when you sit down to mm-hmm. actually write. The sound for me is so key. So I think it's started to just happen initially. I don't necessarily revise for sound, but it's something I'm cognizant of.
And then can you talk a little bit about this interesting project that you're working on? I noticed that the poem that you read about autoimmune disease was a prose poem. So then do you feel like that's a different structure?
Yeah.
When you're working with prose versus just a free verse, like how do you negotiate that as a poet?
So the infusion poem, which is the prose poem, it seemed to want to be a prose poem off the bat because it's weird. I tend to write weird prose poems when I do go for the prose. It just seems like there's more space and liberty to work in the surreal, to be, you know, plain spoken, to be curt, to have that sort of persona. And so I feel at home in that voice in a prose poem.
But do you feel like you're also still working with compression?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a weird negotiation, though.
Yeah, and prose poems are these little, you know, blocks. Mm-hmm. It's very satisfying, but it's a different architecture.
Right.
Right.
And then so your brain is working a little differently.
Absolutely.
So how is it for you as a poet to work on a project? I always find that difficult.
Yeah. It's, you know, I'm a young poet, and I think I've come to a project that I've resisted for a long time. As someone with autoimmune disease, writing poems in undergrad and then grad, I didn't want to be the illness poet. but I've come to embrace that there are some things I need to articulate about it. And I think recently I found a way into the project, which sort of opened it up. I realized that, you know, I was trying to articulate my experience as a single experience. And what I didn't realize is that with autoimmune disease, there's the self that's experiencing illness, and then there's also the body. And those two have to be by nature separate, because autoimmune disease is a process in which the immune system attacks the body. So there's, you know, inherent distance already between the essential self and the body. And I needed to get in between those two and separate them, right in the vein of each, allow them to address and interrogate and confront and empathize with each other. And so that's sort of where a lot of the poems are coming out of right now.
Oh, that's really interesting. Can you read us some more?
Sure. This is Dandelions, which I think has been maybe the manifesto of the project, sort of the first poem that came out of all of this. Dandelions. I eat another hot bag of trash by the highway in the dark matter of a parking lot alone. There is no feeding the body without feeding the disease, so again I run the errands of survival. I let myself down into the fever of fried chicken, fever of my mother crying somewhere. I stoke and fan yards of wound-up gut. I tear at tender all-white tissue, and something inside me goes to work tearing mine. I keep it alive tonight. From the strip mall grass, the dandelions line up to undress in my headlights, to be devastated in my exhaust. So, yeah, a lot of the elements in my current project is working with the environment's relationship to disease. And so whether that's fast food or, you know, urban spaces like a strip mall.
Yeah, because we don't always – that's such a subtle relationship that we don't always think about when we're handling illness and the body. There's also this environmental factor.
Absolutely. And with autoimmune disease, it's so key. The genetic and the environmental sort of collaborate to create this this problem. And so another fractured self of the poems that I'm working on is the mother's body, this origin space where, you know, disease has come from, that genetic role, like I said, as well as the environment. This is from the cemetery on Seton Hill. Beside the dead nuns on dirt that will go to more of the dead, I watch the body of the city undress like a lover. Yellow flesh and dark joint splayed across the valley, so fearful and lonely, trembling and small. This is a poem called To the Body Autoimmune, in which, like I talked about, the self is addressing the body. So it gets to speak. To the body autoimmune. Why do you turn from me now? Look at me, I think I love you. You lick your wounds, you open them. You choke on your own spit. You know what you eat will go to war inside you, but you do it. You rip your bread and eat. You are so hungry.
That's awesome. So can you talk a little bit about the different voices in the project and how you work with those? And
So I've been calling it the essential self, which is sort of the poet voice that I've always written in that feels most authentic and at home, which is entirely distant from the body because it needs to be. In order to feel a sense of health or wholeness, there has to be separation between the physical experience because, you know, your adversary becomes your own body. I think it's a dynamic that poetry handles really well because it allows me to separate them out. But I also think it's a real lived experience that ill people are living. And so then there's the body, which is really hard to get in character of because right. It's so foreign. It's hard to empathize with that character. And, you know, in the last poem, you know, it's hard to even address that character. And how do you do that in a poem without being, you know, too much of a victim? How do you do that well? It's mm-hmm. been a really challenging process right. to sort of strike the right chord that's true and authentic. But so, you know, after that, there's the mother's body, which is, like I said, the origin space where, you know, I grew up watching my mother suffer from a disease that I would later develop. And what does that do mm-hmm. on a psychological level?
Right, so, there's probably also that psychological voice.
Yeah.
Like the id, the ego, all this stuff that starts to, other voices start right. to come out as you're, you know, working on this project. So then you have all these multiple voices.
Absolutely. And, you know, fracturing the self is no new, you know, right. no new project. But I think autoimmune disease lends itself really well to it. yeah. You know, you have the mother, you also have the child who, you know, is experiencing things as a healthy person, you know, before. So I have, you know, pre-illness poems that.
So is your goal sort of to write from all these different voices and have them sometimes speak to each other?
Yes. Yeah. Interaction and sort of representing them fully. And you know, as you said, selves are continually emerging. Mm-hmm. So I'm realizing, okay, well, you know, this isn't representing an entire part of illness, and so it's a large collection so far.
Do you feel, as working on a project like this that's focused on something like disease, do you feel then a responsibility to not? I mean, obviously to yourself, but to the illness, kind of.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've read a lot of disease in poetry, and I think a lot of true and good things have been said already. But I think we tend to represent disease as something that's introduced into the body, like an infection or a virus that we then combat in some way. And there's been little on the dynamic of, you know, the body having to fight itself and somehow break even there from day mm-hmm. to day. You know, in the Dandelions poem, the situation is, you know, you're feeding the same body that's destroying itself. You're really just breaking even in that mm-hmm. moment.
So but we kind of all are.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. I mean, everybody's dying every day, right?
And that's sort of what I really do love about this project or your poems is that there's beautiful moments, but it's not totally pretty.
Right.
And I think poetry has a responsibility today to be a little less pretty.
Yeah. Yeah,
because it's real.
Yeah,
like, this is the life the times we live in, and the kind of complex dynamic of our lives is not always so pretty.
Right. I think it's in the nuance. I mean, mm-hmm. if you have pretty, good, because things are pretty, and everyone loves a pretty poem, but it should have teeth too, because mm-hmm. that's life. I mean, that's more compelling to me.
Yes, right. That's totally what draws me in. So can you read some more?
Sure. It's a little poem called Chronic Disease. Now that happiness is simple and so highly attainable as this heating pad, I bother with it, on and off. I make the bed and lie back down. I break my own heart. And these are our little tiny poems, you know, more compression style. Blue lilies. Bathe the soft white meat of the body after needle, the dark bruise blooming, tender, sparkling water jewel, blue lily opening. So I've been doing a little bit of form poetry.
So do you find that that sort of helps give you a container in which to talk about it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, in graduate school, I found that as well.
For sure. I've taken like 3 form classes, and I've always written the most. I wouldn't say like the best, but definitely the most content and volume. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're working so much with compression, you can kind of lean on it too much. And having some rules is really important sometimes. This is Make a Nest. Try to make him a nest with your Afghans. Keep a small book of essays by the bed. Warm up his ears, one in each of your hands. Buy him a tub of large curd, cottage cheese, and cans of light chunk tuna for the week. Set up his paints in order in Chinese. Diffuse some lavender and balsam fir. Make dough so he can knead it with his fists. Undress a hanger for his wool sweater. Find twigs to whittle thin. Cut a cigar. Drive him into the quiet fields of home. Listen through his back when he plays guitar. Sip at his sleeping breaths like a mother. Wake his face with your hands like a lover. This is Inspection. You're good, he says, and backs my car out from the hot slip of the dirty shop. He passes it for free. He knows my dad, he says, and peels back the naked girl of May to look at June. With a good sore laugh, his teeth unfixed, one eye gone loose, he calls his wife. He does his job.
So, which forms do you find that you're most attracted to? What form was that poem that you?
That was iambic pentameter rhyming. It's like an ABA kind of construction, which I'm not at home in at all. It's hard to get that far across the page, I think, for me for sure. I can do tetrameter. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fun. I think that's more of a natural rhythm for me.
Right.
Yeah. But I love, you know, more complicated things like sestinas and things like that. Yeah.
Do you feel like it depends on subject matter too?
Yeah, man. You got to let the poem kind of dictate the form for sure. Mm-hmm. Or, you know,
you're attracted to those rhyming forms.
Yeah.
They're so nursery.
Yeah. Yeah. Like. Or, you know, things like a sestina that force you to bring back words in new, fresh ways. It's a huge exercise, and it's really fun.
Because that's really down. That's compression.
Oh, yeah.
In a different sort of way, because you're repeating a word.
So it better count, yeah.
Right. Well, it all better count, right? do you have a short one that you can end with?
Yeah, I have a little tiny one. River Street, Savannah. At the cheap stand on the boardwalk, the saxophonist buys 2 hats, one for his head, one for the ground.
The poetry of Shannon Sankey. Thank you, Shannon, so much for being here. It was a pleasure.
Thanks a lot for having me.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts and Entertainment News Weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.